All right, let's get to the sixth seal tonight. Last week, you remember, we left off with John looking underneath the altar. By the way, that altar was in the outer court, was not in the inner court at all. And seeing those that had been martyred, and they were saying, "How long, O Lord, how long?" Now, tonight is the sixth seal. And somebody look in Revelation 6, begin please with verse 12 and go down to verse 14.
"And I saw when he opened the sixth seal, and there occurred an earthquake, a great one, and the sun became black as sackcloth made of hair, and the entire moon became as blood, and the meteors of the heaven fell to the earth as a fig tree casts its unripe figs when it's being shaken by a strong wind. And the heaven was removed like a scroll when it's rolled up. And every mountain and island were moved out of their places."
Okay. So, here he sees something that's happening. He sees an earthquake, darkness, stars falling, mountains moving. Now, this was not unknown whatsoever to the Jewish people to whom John was sending this book to. They had heard of this all their life. Now, I give out several texts. Hope you've looked them up. So, who has Joel 2:10? All right, let's hear it. Okay, so you can see where John is pulling this from the Old Testament. So this was not a new revelation. The Jews had always looked for earthquakes, both physical and also symbol-wise. The Jews thought the greatest earthquake in their time was the falling of the temple in AD 70. So they began to say, man, this is where the beginning of the end is coming because the temple has fallen. That's the earthquake symbol. And this is one of the reasons that they thought Jesus was going to come very, very soon. So these are from the Old Testament. All right, the next one. Somebody read Isaiah 13:10.
"The stars of heaven and their constellations will not flash forth their lights. The sun will be dark when it rises, and the moon will not shed its light."
Okay, so there's the dark day that we're so familiar with. Somebody read Isaiah 13:13.
"Therefore I will make the heavens tremble, and the earth will be shaken out of its place at the wrath of the Lord of hosts in the day of his fierce anger."
Okay, somebody read the one in Jeremiah.
I looked on the mountains, and behold, they were quaking, and all the hills moved to and fro."
Okay. Do you see the symbolism here as you read Revelation? This is just quotes from the Old Testament. This was what, in the Jewish mind, was always the signs of when the end would come. Now, in our philosophy, when do we think the great earthquake took place?
Lisbon.
Pardon?
The Lisbon earthquake.
The Lisbon earthquake. Yeah, 1765, I think. All right, when do we think the dark day was? Yeah, 1833. Thought y'all wasn't coming. Man, if I'd known y'all was coming, we would have waited. Right, Crystal? Well, we're glad y'all are here. Did y'all have any damage yesterday?
Oh, yes.
Did you?
Just a little bit.
Oh, I didn't see the pictures. Who told me?
Couple roofs. Busted out all the lights.
How about the new house y'all were building on that he just built?
Oh, we did. Oh, yeah,
Were you the one they said on TV they were reporting that was out there saying, go that direction, pointing towards that house? Well,
the news cruiser in our neighborhood as he was leaving.
Was it? Well, we're glad that you guys are okay. So I thought about y'all when I heard that what was going on. So, okay, back to where we were. Where were we? I get it. Okay, Jeremiah. Read that again. 4:25.
Okay. I looked and behold, there was no man, and all the birds of the heavens had fled. I looked and behold, the fruitful land was a wilderness, and all its cities were pulled down before the Lord, before His fierce anger.
Okay, very good. So again, we think of the stars falling. 1833, the great earthquake, the dark day, 1792, I think. Who cares? Do you think these are symbols of Jesus coming in our day?
Yeah.
I got a yeah. Anybody else?
You said you think of what were signs about 1700s and 1800s.
Pardon me?
Are those the symbols that...
Yes, that's what I'm discussing, yeah. So do you think that those were the signs for our days? Got a no and I got a yes.
Yeah, and you get them not sure.
And got some not sures, yeah.
I always was suspicious about the falling of the stars because it appeared to be a local event. And if it was going to be a significant event for...
To move that lamp, James. Okay.
Then it should have been... I mean, as it's described here, okay, it would be a cataclysmic event.
Okay.
I would think.
Well, you think so. I think if you go through history, you can find enough symbolism or enough things that happened that you could subscribe this to any period of time. I have absolutely no problems believing these are signs for our day. But I think it's one of the minute ones versus some other things that we're looking at. But you must remember the Jews took the same symbolism that we're looking at, and they thought that Christ was coming in their day. So... you know, to say that the great earthquake was the Lisbon one in 1765. Well, there's been earthquakes throughout history. People just didn't know about them as much as we know about them because they had no way of getting news or media. And I mean, the San Francisco earthquake in 1909 was a tremendous earthquake. And so you could pick out signs all along the way. I think a better way of looking at this is simply that as signs happen or as things happen, we have to be ready on a day-to-day basis. We can't sit around. And there are people within Christianity are waiting for the next sign that proves that we're a little closer to Jesus comes. One of my favorite stories is I have a good friend of mine now at 3 ABN, but at one time he called and said, hey, do you keep keeping up with the great controversy? And the book, and I said, yeah. And well, as the signs get closer, would you give me a call? And then I'm going to have to sit down and look at, you know, my spiritual life as those signs get closer. Well, that's a tremendous, tremendous danger. To sort of sit here and say, well, Christ is coming because almost 200 years ago, we had stars fall, and over 250 years ago, we had a great earthquake. I mean, if this world lasts another 100 years, which we say it won't, but we said that back in World War I and World War II, that the time is close. Well, what are they going to say 300 years from now? 300 years ago, we had a great earthquake? So we have to be careful. Like I said, I have no problems with those signs being taken to God. Jesus is coming, but the first century thought all of these things was going to be the answer in their time. But the point, I think, very important was to the Jews, this was not new news. they had dealt with this all their religious life. Now, there's one other passage we must read, and that's Matthew. Who has Matthew?
I have Matthew 24, 29.
Okay.
Now, immediately after the tribulation of those days, the sun shall be darkened, the moon shall not give its light, and the meteors shall fall from the heaven, and the natural powers that control the heavenly bodies shall be disorganized. And then shall be seen the attesting miracle of the Son of Man in heaven.
Okay. So here again, we have not only the Old Testament prophesying, but we have Jesus Himself saying these are the signs, these were the things that will happen. Here again, I think you can take any broad time and make those fit. So we have to look for something a little bit different along with it. Scott?
We should acknowledge the fact that if a cataclysmic event such as described should occur all basically at once, our chances of actual survival a lot of people will be gone without.
Absolutely. Yeah.
So, waiting for a sign is ridiculous.
Yes. See? And there's some people, I think, Jim, over in the church that you attend, very nice person. But he's written a nice book that says that we can figure out when Jesus is coming. Do you know who I'm talking about? Well, good.
I don't remember meeting anybody.
Okay, well, that's good. See? Stop and think about that. Would you want to know the day and the hour that Christ is coming? Why? I got one. I always like people that speak up.
I would.
Got two people that would.
I would also.
Got three people that would.
I'm going to describe something that someone pointed out to me at work that's in the know. When a group of us were given the, your time's running out, you'll be laid off, there were several who didn't do any more work after that, and others who did. I think if we knew, the risk would be that it would affect us, the way people live their lives drastically.
See, I think it would be my opinion, and obviously I'm disagreeing with those that say yes. I think it would be the cruelest thing that God could do. To say on October the 22nd, just to pick a day, October the 22nd at 7 o'clock in the morning in the year 2014, I'm coming.
You'd have a world of people that full of stress.
Yeah.
They'd be going crazy.
That or what's the most human tendency to do? Is to procrastinate. So then we would get, well, as my good friend said, well, next year I'm going to get to know God a little bit better. And in 2010, I'm going to really get to know Him a little bit better. And I think there's a great, great tendency. So I think it's out of love that he says, don't know. Yes, ma'am.
I think there'd be a lot of people hammering on everybody's mind, saying, you better straighten up.
Yeah.
And that doesn't straighten you up.
Yeah. No.
But the Bible gives you a timeline with the tribulation, the 7 years, and the Great Tribulation is the last half of that. So from when that period starts, you can kind of figure out when that is.
Okay. When we get to that in Revelation, what would you say that the Jews interpreted it, that they were going through those 7 years? See?
They probably thought that was.
They thought it was. See, through our cycle, we all believe that Christ... Do you all think we're going to be here 20 years from now? Got one I do. I'm not talking about this. Do you think? Let me rephrase the question. Now, how many think you're going to die in the next? Do you think Christ is coming in the next 20 years?
Better not, because I don't know how to bake bread.
See?
He might come in your lifetime tonight.
See? But do you think his second coming? Do you think his second coming is in the next 20 years?
Possible.
Most people think it is. Most people say, man, it looks what's happening. Look who's visiting our country this week. You see, if you don't believe that, go to the internet and read all of these things. The world's coming to an end. Man, how can the world get any more wicked than it is now? And we got wars everywhere. This has been going on for generations.
My dad used to say that,
and
it made me mad.
See? I mean,
he was 96 when he died. He lived through all these wars. He heard all these people in his church, Church of Christ. They all said the same thing.
Yes.
It's cutting. This is the end. And he used to always make me mad when he'd say that.
See,
it really is the end now, because I wanted to believe that.
See, in the early 1900s, the church thought the end was close because on the plains of Megiddo, one of the French generals had said that this is a perfect military place to fight a battle. And so the church said, we know it's too close, that Christ is coming close, because Armageddon's going to be fought on the plains of Megiddo, and we just got that militarily this makes sense. And that was over 120 years ago, or 110. So the lesson is, it's today that is the only day that matters. And Christ Himself said, do not be anxious about tomorrow. You can't do anything about it anyway. I like to say, He says, worry about today. And God says to us, I'm already working on tomorrow. But today is the only day. But there is going to be a time. All right, any questions so far? So this was not shock to the Jews at all. They've been reading this for centuries. It's just, what time are we looking at? Well, obviously we like to choose to say, it's in our time. Nothing wrong with that. All right, somebody read the next couple of verses. Starting with 15.
And the kings of the earth, and the great men, and the generals, and the rich, and the strong, and everyone, slave and free, hid in the caves and among the rocks of the mountains, calling to the mountains and rocks, fall on us and hide from us, hide us from the face of the
Okay,
earth.
Let's stop there. Okay. Name seven classification of people. Why? Why did he get specific?
It looked like he included just about everybody.
Yeah, everybody. Nobody is above what's going to happen. No material things that we could possibly own, no positions that we could possibly have will matter in the last days when the judgment comes. So he starts out with the high, and the kings and the great men, the commanders, remember, army generals were as high as you could get outside of being a king or a philosopher. The rich, who were the next, the strong, the powerful, slave, free man, hid themselves in the caves among the rocks of the mountains, and they said to the mountains and to the rocks, fall on us, hide us from the presence of Him who sits on the throne. Why would they say this? God is coming. And they say, hide us from him. Is that the look on God's face as he's coming back? Is that what they're scared of?
I think they're just fearful that he's even coming.
Okay.
At all.
But why?
It's finally happening.
We just had a group in the fifth cells were saying, how long? How long? How long?
Different group of people.
And then this group is saying, hide us. Who was the first people that hid from God?
Adam and Eve.
And why?
Because
they
were afraid.
Okay.
They had estranged themselves from God.
Okay. And how did God treat them after they had sinned?
Just like he did before they sinned.
Pardon?
With love.
Okay. What did he do specifically?
Offered them clothing.
Okay, before that.
He looked for them.
Pardon?
He looked for them, called for them.
He said, where are you? And I read something the other day that explained that a little further, that where are you? He wasn't actually looking for them. It's like, what have you done?
You know, God knew where they were,
right.
But he wanted to point out to them. Okay. Now it says that God came to the garden in the cool of the evening, just as he always did. So who changed?
Okay.
If we have the wrong picture of God, then we would, as lots of times do, well, if you sin, God can have nothing to do with you. Then why in the world would he come to the garden just like he did the day before? He didn't change. It was Adam and Eve. Because when you go against God, Your natural inclination is to run and hide. You ever watch your little kids or grandkids when they do something wrong? How long does it take you to pick up on it? See? It's not God, it's the person's all of a sudden saying, oops, and they're the one in shame. These people are no different. It's not a God coming down from the heavens or showing himself with a big sword in his hand with a scowl on his face. It's not one coming down saying, now it's time that you get yours. It's the same God. It's the way they perceive him. One group says, we've waited. And the other group says, fall on us, let us hide. We don't want to see him. It's what's in the heart that separates these two groups. Read the next sentence. Somebody start with, fall on us. By the way, before we do that, any questions? Sinners, I've always hid from God. That's the natural inclination. All right, somebody start with, fall on us.
Fall on us and hide us away from the one who sits on the throne. And from the anger of the Lamb. For the great day of his anger has come, and who can survive it?
Okay, now which version is that from?
That is the Jerusalem Bible.
Okay, we can throw that one out. All right, who's got a different version?
That's what you expect to read from the Jewish Bible.
I have a little different.
Okay, what do you have?
Which Bible?
Just the passage.
Oh, okay. Fall on us and hide us from the face of him who is seated on the throne and from the wrath of the Lamb.
Okay.
The great day of their wrath.
Okay. That's two words I'm looking for. So we got anger, wrath. Who else has got any different words than those two?
Deep-seated indignation.
Here's one for the great day of their vengeance has come.
Okay, that's a nice one. We like that one too. All right, yours says what?
Deep-seated indignation.
Indignation. I have trouble with that and indigestion, so I better get which one of them right. Indignation. What version is that?
Passion.
Okay. Amplified's fairly close to the Greek, so that's not a problem. Any other versions? Or any other words? I'm looking for wrath.
Wrath is what I have to
use. Okay. Okay. All right.
Well, in 17 it uses retribution.
Retribution, okay. All right. Now, I just got through saying that this is the same nice God, and then here John comes along and says he's full of wrath. Full of anger, that version says. Incorrect, by the way. Now, how do we tie that together? How can you be the same loving God and be full of wrath? Is wrath a nice word?
No, not particularly. But it says because the great day of their wrath has come.
Okay. But the first up there says, "For the come from the wrath of the Lamb." Now, if you read that by itself, wrath of the Lamb, what would be your picture?
Anger, vengeance.
Yeah. So, how do we...
I don't know, because, you know, they say he's the lion and the lamb, and I would think if people wanted to show anger, that they would use a lion to go out.
Okay, I agree. You don't think of a lamb, but what is that wrath then?
Studied about Jesus in the temple and his wrath and his anger, you know, and then to find out it's quite different from what we always learn. And this, what that Bible that translates fierce
indignation.
That sounds
a little bit better. We kind of like that.
Sounds closer to what?
Well, let's all turn to Romans 1. I'm going to read, if I can see, Romans 1. I'm going to read 18. Just listen or read along, then we're going to stop. Romans 1. Everybody there that wants to be there? For the wrath of God is revealed. So would we take that as meaning that we're going to see what the wrath of God is? For the wrath of God is revealed from heaven against all ungodliness and unrighteousness of men who suppress the truth. That's a sermon in its own. What truth does he try to suppress? In unrighteousness, it's because that which is known about God is evident without them, for God made it evident to them. So the truth, as it always is about God. That's the truth they tried to suppress. For since the creation of the world, his invisible attributes, his eternal power, divine nature, have been clearly seen, being understood through which he has made to them that are without excuse. For even though they knew God, they did not honor him as God or give thanks, but they became futile in their speculation, foolish in their heart, and they was darkened. Professing to be wise, they became fools and exchanged the glory of the incorruptible God for an image in the form of corruptible man and of the birds, four-footed animals, and traveling creatures. Now, do you get the picture? The wrath of God is going to be revealed against these people who are suppress the truth about God. And it says that from creation, the truth about God has always been known, who He is. But everybody that tramples that truth... Now, here's the wrath of God. Somebody read the first sentence of verse 24.
Therefore God gave them over...
Okay, read the first verse of 26.
For this reason, reason God gave them over to the grave.
Read verse 28.
And just as they did not see fit to acknowledge God any longer, God gave them over to a depraved mind.
Okay. Romans 1 is the answer to what is God's wrath. But this is not new. If we had time, which we don't, we could go to the book of Hosea, where God pleads with Israel, and He finally says, I have no other choice. I must leave Ephraim, another word for Israel. I must leave Israel alone. Let them go to their idols. Now, He says this in a weeping voice. Romans comes in and says, how is God's wrath revealed? He simply honors the choices that you have made. So, He says to those that do, therefore God gave them over to the lust of their hearts. For that reason, God gave them over to degrading passions. And it goes on and on. And as they did not see fit for the knowledge of God any longer, God gave them over to a depraved mind to those things which they would not prosper. It is not God who brings punishment with Him. He simply does what hurts Him the most. He gave them over. Now, everybody please turn to John 19:30, because I'm going to give you the exact same Greek word. Does everybody have 19:30? When Jesus therefore had received the sour wine, He said, it is finished. He bowed His head and gave over His spirit. Same identical word. When Jesus died on the cross, what was the reason that He died? What did He say to His Heavenly Father? What was His words? Why have you given me over? Why have you given me up? Now, that's God's wrath. Now, do any of us think for a second that God delighted, punished, wanted to do these things to His Son? What do you think God was doing at Calvary as His Son said, my God, why have you given me up? Why have you forsaken me? What do you think God was doing? Weeping. What do you think God is doing to these people when He uses the same exact words, I've got to give you up? You see, there's nothing left for these people. There's nothing. How do you deal? Listen to the descriptions of these people. For impurity, that their bodies would be dishonored. For the exchange of the truth of God for a lie, and worship and serve and the Creator rather than the creature rather than the Creator. For the natural function is that of which is unnatural. Same way that men abandoned their natural functions of women and burned in their towards one another, with men committing indecencies, a depraved mind, arrogant, insolent, boastful, inventors of evil, disobedient to parents, no understanding, no unworthiness, no mercy. What can you do with these people? It's never God saying, I've got to punish you. You've sinned, so I've got to do something to you. He doesn't have to do that. He says, sadly, there's nothing more I can do for you. So I'll just give you up. But oh, how sad he is. You see, we have painted the picture that God has to avenge. God has to show anger. That God has to make things right by punishing. He's never done that. Go back and read Ellen White on the flood. They were so wicked that death was a mercy to the people as they existed. And it's the same thing at the time of end. It's not that God destroys. They die in mercy. Because what happens when a person lives in absolute filthy, immoral surroundings? Life is not worth anything. So, when the Lamb comes, what is His wrath? To those that love Him, they can hardly wait. To those that chose another path, they're just like Adam and Eve. I've got to hide. Somebody hide me. I can't stand to see Him. The children of Israel in the wilderness. Remember after they sinned, they saw Moses. Moses' light face was a light from the glory, and they couldn't even stand that. Hide that face from us. When you're a sinner, you do not want to be in the presence of God. So, what is the sixth seal? Before the sixth seal, there was a multitude who stood up and said, I'll die for you, Lord. I love you enough. I will sacrifice my life for you. And they were slain by the thousands. The sixth seal says there's going to be another group. When I come, they're going to hide. And then the next one is going to be, boy, don't dismay. I got 144,000 over here. And they're going to join a number over here that I can't even count. But the book of Revelation will plead with us as we keep going through the book. Don't be in that group. Because we're going to see this group over and over throughout Revelation that says, I'm going to do it my way. I want to serve what I want to do. I want to do it the way I want to. And they become further from God. And in Romans, he spells out what we become when we don't have God in our life. Any comments?
So, we see the same face. And it brings joy to our hearts. And those that have done evil see that same face. Yep. And they are...
Let me illustrate. Within just a few minutes, as they were moving Jesus from one beating to another beating, he came across Peter and Judas. He looked at Peter with that look of love of how could you do this? I feel so sorry. See, we think that Jesus said, how could you do this? I'm unhappy. It says he reached out and he looked at Peter and he felt so sorry for Peter. And when Peter saw that look on Jesus' face, it broke his heart and he went out to the Garden of Gethsemane and he laid down there and he prayed and he prayed and he prayed and he wept. Just a few minutes later, he comes across Judas. And he gives Judas that same look. Poor Judas. My heart yearns for you. I know what you're going through. And what did Judas do?
Couldn't live with himself.
He went out and hung himself. Why? One was sincere, though wrong, many, many times. But he loved Jesus. And when he saw that look, he couldn't stand it. And he went and became a different human being. Judas, who never loved Christ, who was not chosen, he looked at that same face and he went out and hung himself. It's exactly what happens when Christ comes. No different.
That's the text that you quoted a little bit ago. Depart from me, I never...
We were never friends.
What is that text about?
It's in there, and read it in John, where they're separating the sheep from the goats, and they say, well, Lord, we did all of these things. I went and healed. I went and prayed. I went and all that. And Jesus says, King James says, I never knew you. The correct Greek version correctly says, we were never friends. But see, that's the look that they look at. It's us, the way we respond. And that's God's judgment. That's why the sixth seal cannot, the importance cannot be an earthquake, darkening of the sun. That cannot be the important part. The important part is when God reveals Himself, if we're not with Him, we want no part of Him. That's the important part. Father in heaven, it's always good that we can come before you and study your word. We pray that each one of us today will have that relationship with you. And the day will come, Father, that as you come, we'll be able to look at you and say, my, we've waited a long time. Our King has come. Glory to His name. You love us, Father, and that we appreciate. In your Son's name we pray. Amen.